Well, it is with great pleasure that I have the opportunity to introduce today's session on a historical and significant event in health education credentialing certification, a look at a unique process for validating the process. So, my name is Nicolette Warren, and I work for the Society for Public Health Education, SOFI, as well as serving on the Division Board for Professional Development for NCHEC. So without further ado, I'm going to take this time to introduce our three speakers for today. Our first speaker is going to be Linda Sobole.
Lysobe.
I gave you a new last name. Lysobe. Sorry. Too concentrated on getting the other last names right. The Executive Director for the National Commission for Health Education Credentialing Incorporated. Our following speaker is going to be Blossom Parvatilla, and she is the Certified Project Coordinator for the National Commission for Health Education Credentialing. And our third speaker and final speaker is going to be Stephen
Gambash.
Yeah, I gave you a new last name as well. And he also is serving on the Division Board for Professional Prep and Practice, and as well as the Board of Commissioners for the National Commission for Health Education and Credentialing. Without further ado, I'll turn it over to our speakers for today. Thank you.
This is funny. I'm not used to a room of one. We could, but I keep hoping maybe someone will come in, so we'll do it. So to start with, I'm Linda Lysobe, and I'm subbing in for Beth Cheney in the beginning. You know, this weather has just been amazing, and, you know, with all of the changing in air traffic, she ended up, her flight was moved earlier today, and I was so afraid she wasn't going to make the flight, so I said that I would do it. So I'll actually be the first and the last speaker. And Blossom will go second, and Stephen is third in here. So Beth is going, we'll be doing four presentations total about the EDO, the experience documentation opportunity for the Master Certified Health Education Specialist. And Beth was going to do the summative report of the applications that were submitted for the MCHES. And all four of us did not have any disclosures today. So we'll be talking about the EDO opportunity and the mechanism that was used for conferring the inaugural cohort of MCHES. We'll be looking at the common subcompetencies that were used in the process and discuss the results and implication of the EDO for the field of health education. So to start with, we have to remember kind of what started the MCHES. And if we look at the health educator job analysis that was completed in 2009, it was completed in 2009, it was actually released in 2010. So we actually call it the HEJA 210. And those was a two-year study, and the results of that verified the previous study, which was the National Health Educator Competency Update Project, or we know it as CUP. So both of those studies developed this hierarchical framework for practice, seven areas of responsibility, three distinct levels of practice, the entry, the advanced one, and the advanced two. So each of those build upon the first, so the entry, and then the advanced one builds on the entry, and then the advanced two builds on both entry and advanced one. Results in 34 competencies in health education, 162 entry-level subcompetencies, and 61 additional advanced-level subcompetencies. In addition, the HEJA, for the very first time, validated 113 knowledge items. And that was the first time we even tried to do that in our study. So the results of the HEJA 210 frame both the CHES certification as well as the development of this new advanced MCHES. The EDO process was a unique opportunity for us. The advanced certification is a significant event in the history of certification of health education specialists. And the process that we used was unique, and that's why we wanted to share it today. The process that we used to identify, review, and improve the experience of current CHEZ as practicing at the advanced level was the first time that we did something like that, and we really want to share that. And we're doing it both in presentation form and in publications. And then as we went through the process to review the applicant's materials, we just got so excited because we could really see, it was the first time we could really see how current CHEZ understood, applied, and articulated the advanced level subcompetencies. So the process to do that, it was a 6-month window in which to submit the EDO, the experience documentation opportunity, was from October 15th, 2010 to April 2011. And this was available only for those who had already been CHEZ 5 years and were currently active. The process involved an application and a fee. And the crux of it was this form, this experience self-appraisal and testament of practice form. In this form, the applicant had to briefly detail engagement in 4 advanced health education activities and then link those activities to 1 advanced subcompetency in a corresponding area of responsibility. And that was really the key to it, and we'll be talking about that more in both Stephen's presentation and my final comments around the exercise in which the individual evaluated themselves, linked these activities, and then the next step in this is that they had to have it reviewed by 2 recommenders. So the recommenders could be current, past, supervisor, manager, or colleagues, but it had to be someone who could attest to the applicant's advanced level of practice. The applicant then had to produce documentation that would support the advanced activity and also produce a resume or a CV that would show 5 years of experience in health education. Right backwards, didn't I? No, is this the next one? No. Let me try again. Okay, here it is. Thank you. So the review process involved a predetermined protocol that was created by the elective division board for professional preparation and practice. That's the board that Stephen Gambasha sits on. Actually, you're the vice coordinator of that division board. And the process was also approved by the Board of Commissioners, which is the governing board, and Stephen also sits on that board. Documentation, including the self-appraisal and the testament of practice form and resume, were reviewed by CHEZ-certified reviewers, so internally within the office. And then if the review of the documentation was questionable, the application was then sent to the DBPPP panel for further review and approval or disapproval. And during that process, when it went to the review panel, the panel could request additional information of the applicant. And we called that errata. That's the word that we use for it, an errata process. And Stephen will talk about that a little bit more. And then if there was someone that was denied the certification, there was a formal process that they could use to appeal as well. So during that 6-month period, 4,116 CHEZ were eligible to submit an application, meaning they met the 5-year criteria of active CHEZ, and a total of 863 applied, around 21%. Of those 862, 819 were approved, 36 were denied, and 7 withdrew their application. Of the 36 applicants that were denied, 21 of those failed to complete the entire application process, and the rest were denied on the merit of their application. I had mentioned the errata process, where the individual could be requested to submit more information or actually explain the information that they had submitted, and there were 140 applications that received that formal request for more information. And of that group, 138 were ultimately approved. The breakdown of those who went through and were awarded the EDO, the MCHES credential via the EDO. Again, the number was 819. 87% of these were female. This is race reported, self-reported race by the applicant, and you can see 12 African American, 12% African American, 5 Asian Pacific Island, 69% Caucasian, 5, almost 6% Hispanic, and 1.8% identifying themselves as other, and 5% didn't report. So as far as degrees, who were approved, I should say, not applied. Again, this is working with the 819 number. 31% had a doctorate degree. 52% had a master, and that could be a combination of MPH, MA, MS, and bachelor degree were 141 or 17%. Self-reported work settings, I think this is interesting. The university was the highest reported work setting at 271 individuals, and then healthcare, and then other, which was just kind of people didn't identify themselves within these. Although when we looked at them sometimes, we thought they probably would fall into one of the others. The other thing about university that I want to make sure that I say is that that's not just exclusively faculty. There could be sometimes people working in university-funded programs for the community, and sometimes they're working in, like, student health or something like that, so it wasn't all just faculty. So as we went through this EDO process, we felt like it really gave us a snapshot of practice. Because the applicant had to identify what it was they were doing in their jobs, and they had to identify it within the areas of responsibilities and subcompetencies. So I'd like to take a couple of minutes and talk about those responsibilities and subcompetencies in terms of frequency of use and types of documentation. So I'm sure you're all used to seeing this, where we list out our 7 areas of responsibility, but this time we're giving you the percentage of times that that particular area of responsibility was used. And remember that each applicant must submit 4 activities. So there would be 4 areas of responsibilities that were used for each applicant. So the highest tier was serve as a health education resource and administer and manage health education. And that makes sense to me. And then planning is pretty close behind that. So we wanted to pull out what were the most frequently used advanced level subcompetencies and then make a few comments about that. The most frequently used one was at number 345 was provide expert assistance. And again, that makes sense. And that may be partly because that seemed to be the easiest one to document. I'm not sure. And then for our conference junkies, disseminate research findings through conference presentations, create training objectives, implement training sessions and programs, and lead advocacy initiatives. I also thought it would be helpful to just pull out some of the positions and then look at what subcompetencies those individuals used. So here are some of the positions: Healthy Living Unit Director, Physical Activity and Nutrition at a State Health Department. And this particular person used 3.3.2. Again, 3 meaning area 3, 3 meaning competency 3, and then 0.2 is the subcompetency level, and that's identify training needs. Also, this person used conference presentation, managing program budgets, and using evidence-based research to develop policy to promote health. That's under the advocacy section. Another person had the title of health education specialist/photographer at a publication company, and this individual selected various strategies to ensure consistency with objectives, identify training needs, implementing strategies to enhance staff and volunteers' career development, and provide expert assistance. There's another profile. This is a health scientist at CDC in the area of smoking. And the four that this person selected are create training, disseminate research findings through conference presentations, synthesize data for purposes of reporting. That's in area five of the administrative area responsibility. And then this provide expert assistance, which obviously came up many times. And then the fourth one here is health promotion manager at a medical facility. And this person, again, chose conference presentations, budget requests for fiscal resources, expert assistance, and this one chose lead advocacy initiatives. So in the next couple slides, I'd like to look at the advanced subcompetencies and what kind of documentation was used to substantiate the activity of the advanced subcompetency. So under providing expert assistance, this is probably the one that we saw the most variant types of documentation. A dissertation title page, letters from project directors, sometimes a planning committee roster or a published meeting agenda where they were kind of pulled in to be the expert. Under the professional conferences, those were maybe more standard things of the confirmation letter, the abstracts, the agenda, or the conference brochure. And then under training, the acknowledgement section from a curriculum, a letter documenting contract duties, staff training documentation, or training program overview. Under subcompetency, this is an area six. Subcompetency 628, implement training sessions and programs. Under this training area, it could be the conference speaker, a confirmation letter, a consultant contract, a training agenda, a promotional flyer, a letter of appreciation, or a supervisor letter of appointment. And then under 749, again, area seven is communicate and advocate. And in the area of 749 is lead advocacy initiatives, some copy of testimony, advocacy article abstracts, newspaper articles, published articles, meeting agenda, and program summary. So let me make a couple comments on the frequency of the use of the subcompetencies. All subcompetencies were used at least once. The frequency of the selection is not necessarily a function of frequency or importance of the subcompetency related to job performance. And let's be honest about it. It could have been ease of documentation that influenced. I see a nodding head, and I think those of us up here who did it did that too. This is something I had. I know that it links to an advanced level subcompetency, and so I will submit it. Not necessarily what I think is always the most important or the most frequent thing that I do. And then the other thing that factors into that is that the time period was limited to the most recent 5 years. So you might have done a wonderful project, but it was 6 or 7 years ago, and so that wouldn't meet the criteria. So I think that we have to factor that in as well, that time period, as we think about which competencies were used the most. Subcompetencies were used the most, sorry. So after all is said and done, and we went through this process, what are some of our conclusions around that? And, you know, the first one is that the founders of our profession were correct. They verified in practice what has been researched through the role delineation, the COP, and the HEDIS studies, that there is such a thing as a generic health educator, and we saw this across all these practice settings, and that was really exciting to see. And I really felt like it provided true insight into the eclectic role that the health education specialist plays in our organization and in the health field. Here's some of our portraits. These are people who were awarded the MCHES via the EDO. I think this one with the group is significant. They're at MD Anderson, and they did that kind of, as a group, they were very much encouraged by their employer to do it, so that was good. And I wanted to point out Dr. Chen is on our board, but he was actually the chair of the Board of Commissioners when the EDO finally went through. And down at the bottom is Dixie Dennis, who had been previous chair but also had really spearheaded a lot of the processes that we went through to finally do the MCHES EDO.